All right, we usually look at something in Baptist history, and this morning we're going to look at St. Patrick's Day and tell you about the history of St. Patrick's Day. And some of you know this. I know that college students get a great lesson from Mr. Armacost on this subject, but there are many things that the world thinks about St. Patrick, whom St. Patrick's Day is named after. For centuries, the Roman Catholic Church has claimed that Patrick was Irish and that he was a Roman priest, and actually both of those are not true, but he was not Irish, he was British, and there's a big difference. Ask a Britishman or an Irishman if there's a difference. He was not a Roman priest. Over 100 years ago, the Baptist historian Gerald, W.A. Gerald, who is probably the foremost authority on Patrick, put into print what had been known by Baptists for centuries, and that Patrick was not a Catholic priest at all, but rather, as Gerald said it, a Baptist missionary. Now, the name Baptist would not have been used back then, because we're talking about Patrick was born in 380 A.D., and the term Baptist as a denomination or as a people or a belief system was not really used probably for another 1400 years. But in all that we can tell by all his writings and everything that went on, he believed very, very much like we did. And these men in the 1800s called him a Baptist. But I bring this up today so that we can know the truth. This is a big deal, especially in a large city like Chicago, where there's a large Irish-American population, New York City, where the big parades are. And, of course, the world just thinks of Patrick as a Catholic and as a great Catholic holiday. But we're going to learn a little more about that and see if that's true or not. But in fact, so zealous were these historians in the 1800s, I want to read one. They were so spirited about their conviction that Patrick was not a Catholic, that one wrote, Rome's most audacious theft was when they seized bodily the Apostle Peter and made him the putative head and founder of her system. But next to that brazen act stands her effrontery when she annexed the great missionary preacher of Ireland and enrolled him among one of her saints. I think that's a great quote. So Patrick, his name actually wasn't Patrick, it was Sacathus. He was given the name Patricus by probably his admirers. It was kind of a name of honor, and so we know him as Patrick, and we'll call him Patrick for these purposes, but that really wasn't his original name. He was born about 380 A.D., as I said, probably near what is now Dumbarton, Scotland. And it's also generally accepted he lived to be quite old, over 100 years of age at the time of his death. His father, Calpurnius, was a deacon in a Bible-believing New Testament church. Again, it wouldn't have been called a Baptist church, but it would have been an ancient British church that believed, Bible-believing church, much the same we believe. His father was a deacon. His grandfather was a pastor before that. And his father, Calpurnius, was converted to Christ when he was on a business trip to Rome. He served as a Roman civil officer, and he was in Rome and heard the gospel while he was there and was saved during that time. He came back, and as I said later, he was a deacon in a church. Young Patrick was, as Cathcart, the Baptist historian, says, was wild and wicked until his 16th year. And while he was working on his father's farm, he and several of the workers, they were seized and kidnapped and carried off and sold into slavery by a band of pirates. They were taken to Ireland, sold into slavery by an Irish chieftain. There, the young Patrick sat for 5 years and labored as a slave. Later, he would recount that it's during that very dark period of time that he's thinking, you know, his mind is going back over his childhood and the gospel messages and testimony that his father had. And it was during that time while he was a slave that he was saved. Gerald wrote about 100 years ago, he said, the truth which saved him when a youthful slave in pagan Ireland was taught him in his godly home by his father. So then when he was 21, he escaped and he hid and got back to Britain, returned to his father's home, and he He found that his father had died in the meantime. All his land had been confiscated. And so the young Patrick grew in the Lord and really became a strong Christian during this time. When he was about 40 years old, or maybe I guess before that, because he went back to Ireland when he was 40, but before that, God definitely called him back to Ireland. He of course, remembered this time of slavery. He remembered the pagans, the pagan worship, all this heavy on his heart, and God used that to call him back to Ireland to be a missionary. So at about 40 years of age, he began his magnificent work there in Ireland. The Irish people were wild. They were primitive. Again, this is 400 A.D., and they were animists. They worshipped trees, stones. They worshipped animals. They're just a pagan, very much pagan people. They believed the spirits dwelt in these idols, and they sacrificed their babies to these idols to secure better harvests and good luck and everything else. About a year after he arrived in Ireland, God led him to do something very interesting, and this changed his whole ministry. But and this is kind of hard to describe, but there's a pagan ritual, a pagan holiday right before Easter. It was in Ireland, and I think it's called the Festival of Tara. And I don't totally understand this, and I'll try to describe it. But the rule was that no fires could be lit that evening until the royal family had lit their fire, and whatever. So that was the big ritual. And so Patrick later says that God led him to do this, and Patrick lit an entire field on fire, a field that went up a hill, and almost just a huge, huge bonfire, maybe stretching several hundred yards, and lit that on fire. Just an audacious move, just completely. He did this on purpose to get the king's attention, and he said that challenged the royal authority by lighting this fire on the hill of Slane on the night of the Easter Eve. I'm reading from a historian now that I'll read you what his comments were. He said, "Ah, this should put iron in our blood. Glorious, audacious Patrick challenged all the forces of hell. Not a little flame did he kindle, but a bonfire, a huge bonfire. All the people were transfixed, and King Logier was amazed at his daring and said, 'If we do not extinguish this flame, it will sweep over all of Ireland.'" Later, he says, "This prophecy proved to be true, for because of this, really a holy fire fell from heaven, and there were years and years of repentance and people being saved because of what will happen next." But the king was enraged and wanted to see what kind of person this was that would light this fire and take on the entire belief system of this pagan ritual. And so he sent for him. The Druid priests were infuriated, and they declared they would destroy this preacher if he dared to come. But in the light of the dim light of Easter morning in 1428. This great hero of the cross and his assistant missionaries marched boldly into the presence of the monarch and told him that Christ was the light of the world and preached Jesus crucified and risen from the dead. And with such persuasive eloquence and power of God that great conviction fell. The king was saved that morning. And because the king believed and opened that door, God just used that to open up this field. And we're going to go into it next week. I'm going to take another week and talk a little bit more about his beliefs so that we're not just, so you don't think I'm just making this up about his Baptistic beliefs. But multiply thousands of people were saved in the next 33 years of his ministry. Patrick himself baptized by immersion almost 12,000 people himself. Just an amazing, amazing story that I'll tell you next week. He began, as far as I can tell, he started almost 400 churches. It is said that the churches were innumerable. They dotted the hills and valleys, and those churches, those independent churches, sent forth missionaries to proclaim the message over into Scotland, to England, into Germany, and even into what would become France. And so I'm going to stop there because of time, but just wanted to tell you the story of this great man who has been kidnapped by Catholicism, and we're told he's a Catholic priest, and he is not. And we're going to, I guess, what I will tell you next week is I'll read to you from his writings, because this is where we've determined that he believed more like us than anything, and just want to show you his beliefs about the Bible and about his work and churches and baptism. And so I want to thank God this morning for this great man. wouldn't be called a Baptist, but historians have called him a Baptist, Patrick. And we won't call him St. Patrick because we don't call our great Christian heroes saints. But I want to thank the Lord this morning for Patrick and his ministry.